A whole new world, do 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 do, where heroes reborn, return again. Where did they go into? A pocket universe, and now they're back with Onslaught hunting them.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Second Print Comics Podcast, starring Mark Clare and Renzo Martinez.
My Sharona! I don't know why. I've had that song in my head for days. You know how when you've got it, you just think about it everywhere in every situation? I'm walking to work today. My Sharona. And then I'm in the middle of a meeting. My. And then I'm at dinner. And then I'm like, oh, I got to get back for something. And by the way, it's one of those moments where it's like, yeah, do I really hate the song or not? If you're going to have a song that bugs you, at least have it be a song that's not going to drive you crazy. But you don't care about that. Welcome once again to the Second Print Comics Podcast. I sound different. I'm recording from a hotel. Meanwhile, we've got somebody calling in from Mexico. We couldn't do this again if we didn't bring the one, the only, the mighty milquetoast from Metropolis himself, the mysterious Mr. Mark Clare. Mark, how's life?
The Metropolis milquetoast. I think I'm going to start going by that. I'm going to hijack that Kingdom Come Magog nickname for Superman.
Just run, brother, run.
Yeah. Renzo, this situation is just another testament to our dedication to our fans. You are in a hotel room without your normal audio setup. I'm in central Mexico, where I do have my audio equipment, but I don't necessarily have the most ideal setup. And, you know, there's children running around this house. There's yoga classes going on. There's a lot going on around me. And you've got warm beer.
Well, like that warm. It's growlers are amazing.
Well, that's where we differ, because I actually have a nice cold Victoria 40-ounce beer from the local tiendita here in Xochitepec, Mexico, that cost me all of, it's actually 48 pesos, which is about $2.50. But it's only that because here, like, if you buy a big bottle of beer like this, you're supposed to drink it, then you're supposed to bring it back to the store, and then they give you a new one for only like 15 pesos more. So most of this price I paid is for this bottle that I can later return for a new one.
There you go.
So yeah, this is going to be a little different episode because neither of us have our normal setups, and we are both drinking. So, you know, it's going to be fun. That's all I know.
We're in a whole new world, Mark. And speaking of whole new world, for us to understand the whole new world we're in, we've got to go back to
a whole new world.
Things all about to get weird.
Where heroes reborn, return again. Where did they go into? A pocket universe. And now they're back with Onslaught hunting them. I made that up on the fly, kids. That's talent.
That was pure Disney magic right there. And speaking of Disney magic, Mark, I've got two of some of our favorite people in this story, Jeff Loeb and Rob Liefeld, coming back together a decade later than... To come back in an event that almost nobody thought was going to happen. We've spoken a little bit about the Heroes Reborn era of Marvel. It was Marvel's first attempt at a big continuity reboot. This is the upcoming sequel to it that came out in 2005. And I've always loved Heroes Reborn. It was one of the first things I got into when I started collecting like older comics. And for me, it was older comics because, like I've said on the show many times, I was a child of the Ultimate Comics that were meant to get millennials and other young people in the early 2000s.
But and it worked. It here you are.
And this Heroes Reborn series, this Onslaught Reborn story that we're going to cover today is probably one of my personal favorites.
Well, that is interesting because this story, I had never heard of this. When I saw this, I remember we have a little document where we share our whole podcast schedule on. We're always kind of adjusting, and I was looking down and I saw the next episode. I was like, Onslaught Reborn? Is this a joke? Is this like a parody comic? Was this a real thing that happened? But no, turns out it was a real thing that happened. I had some initial thoughts about it before reading it, and I have slightly different thoughts after reading it. I don't want to reveal what any of those thoughts are because I want to let the mystery unfold live here. I want you to live in the moment with us. But before we get into the story, well, first of all, any housekeeping? we got going on? I guess we have some amazing stuff going on our Patreon as always. I've personally been cranking out a little more extra content now that I've had a little more downtime here in Mexico. I was able to pump out a new random Marvel Comics podcast to our Patreon feed that just dropped, looking at a Silver Age story. I just dropped this one today. Invaders number 12, a Silver Age comic that takes place in the Golden Age. So it's like tales of yore of the World War II invaders. Had a really fun time reading that one, actually. And then I've also been going through what we have dubbed my fuck it pile, the pile of comics that are neither bagged nor boarded, that are housed at my house in Connecticut. I grabbed a chunk of them, and I'm slowly going through those and doing reviews of those on the Patreon. So I looked at Extreme Sacrifice number 1, and I will soon be looking at Extreme Sacrifice number 2. What do these two comics have in common with the comic we're going to be looking at today? That is the art by one Rob Liefeld.
I want one of the trinity of second print like saints right there in terms of some of our favorite people. But you know, Mark, this is something that was, I think you were probably in your mid-teens when this came out. Were you familiar with the Heroes Reborn era?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, this was like right in the midst of my huge comic fanhood. So I remember everything. I remember the Onslaught, I don't know what they called it, the Onslaught Saga or whatever it may have been that led up to Heroes Reborn. I'm pretty sure I collected all of the Heroes Reborn comics. I know I definitely collected Captain America, Fantastic Four. I'm not sure if I had all of the Avengers. I definitely dipped my toe into it, but no, I was all in. I mean, this is the point in my comic career where Marvel could, you got a Marvel event, guess what? I'm in. Like they were selling me on just about everything. Same with DC. So I'm certainly familiar with the entire event. Maybe before, and we also looked at some of the aftermath. I think maybe like 4 or 5, probably longer, probably a couple months ago, we looked at the Avengers that came out of Heroes Return, which was when they all came back from the Heroes Reborn universe. Remzo, I'm going to leave this one to you. Why don't you give everybody a, I don't know, 30 to 60 second recap of all of Onslaught and Heroes Reborn and Heroes Return?
Well, Mark, I'll do one better because it actually slides right into the first couple pages of Heroes Reborn issue 1. So here we go. We open it up to a fantastic full...
Or of Onslaught Reborn.
Onslaught Reborn. It's all the same thing.
Whatever. It's all Reborn.
How the books work. We started drinking, folks. You can imagine. So yeah, we're in issue 1 of...
It's a drinky episode, folks.
We're on issue 1 of Onslaught Reborn. We open up to a giant full-page spread of Liefeld drawing the sexy Scarlet Witch screaming no more mutant.
By the way,
Wow. She's got it going on. And basically, here's what you need to know, because I'll condense it, because...
Look at the abs on this Scarlet Witch. I guess part of that's maybe her corset.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's all of it. Just admire all of it. But anyway, you see her casting a hex and she screams no more mutants. Here's the big condensed version. In the early 90s, Professor X and Magneto got into a fight. Because of that fight, using both of those Omega level mutants' powers, they somehow merged consciousness and formed a giant evil, like psychic demon monster named Onslaught. And Onslaught tried to basically kill the Marvel Universe. And what it wanted to do was it wanted to basically erase the entire Marvel 616 world. In order to go ahead and actually fight Onslaught, though, they had to bring in what at the time they thought was the strongest mutant on Earth, Franklin Richards.
So, well, what do you mean at the time?
At the time, because, you know, Jonathan Hickman hates fans. And he wants to.
Oh, yeah, because Hickman unmutanted him.
Yeah, he unmutant. He took away his mutant card, Mark. So what Franklin Richards has to do is he can't just destroy Onslaught. So what he has to do is he has to create a pocket dimension to shoot him into that will trap him. But in order for that to happen, somebody actually has to push him in. So the Avengers and the Fantastic Four sacrifice themselves to push Onslaught into this world. But as a result, they lose their lives. So for over 5 years, the Avengers and the Fantastic Four are, quote, dead in the main Marvel universe.
Was it supposed to be 5 years, continuity-wise?
It's supposed to be like that. Yeah, so
it was 1 year in real life, but we all know comic world works differently.
Yeah, so basically they get shoved into this world. Everyone thinks they're dead, right? Wrong. What ends up happening is they basically start brand new lives in a brand new world of no memory, with no powers, nothing, starting from scratch and whole new continuities. And this was done in order for Marvel to try their first big reboot of what some would consider floundering comic titles with new artists and writers such as Jeff Loeb, Jim Lee, and Rob Liefeld. They were the ones in charge of it. So we saw a brand new origin for Captain America, a brand new Iron Man title, a brand new Fantastic Four title, a brand new Avengers title. These titles did great until Marvel was like, now we kind of want to bring them back into the main world. That's when some stuff goes down. Franklin saves everyone because he wants his family and friends back. And
the heroes return. Dr. Doom was involved. Some shit happened and they're back.
And because comics, everything kind of went on. However, and this is where we see Scarlet Witch. In 2005, there was a series called House of M. House of M was where they messed up the world again, and they put everyone in alternate reality. And at the end of it, the Scarlet Witch got so pissed with everyone, she said no more mutants. So the mutant population went down from like several million to just a couple hundred. But what ends up happening too is that because of her hex magic, she causes a rip in space-time, which causes Onslaught to come back, and that's where we are right now.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting. I did really like the No More Mutants, you know, House of M tie-in to set this all up. You know, could go without the explanation of how that somehow recreated Onslaught, but whatever, it got us here, and because comics, here we are.
And because comics, things get stranger. We see that after that, somehow Onslaught is back from wherever the hell he was. And who does he want? He wants the person that caused all of his problems. He wants Franklin Richards. So he comes back and immediately he's looking scary as shit in the rubble of some street in New York. And he's screaming, where is the boy? Where is Franklin Richards?
So am I supposed to think that Onslaught was like, what was going on in between here? Was he supposed to have been trapped still in the pocket universe? Did the pocket universe get destroyed and then copied by the one we're going to see later? Or was he just reformed? Or what was he doing this whole time?
So
or
did
he
not,
it just didn't exist?
Yeah, so I'll go ahead and explain that in a minute. But the last time we saw Onslaught in the late 90s, he was dead, but with the potential to come back. So that way they could do something like this years later. So basically, now we're at the back. Now we're at some type of asteroid field where Franklin Richards is running away somehow in space. Don't ask me why; it doesn't make much sense. And he's being chased by a villain named Blastar, and something's wrong. What ends up happening is the Thing comes in. You know, everyone's favorite big orange rocky monster, and he goes ahead and saves little Franklin, who's running away from Blastar, this evil alien. And what turns out is that they're actually in a giant training room that somehow Franklin was in, doing whatever, playing, training. I don't know what kids do. And
very X-Men danger room vibes here.
Yeah, and what ends up freaking both of them out is that Franklin was doing something, but things got off the handle, and he could have actually gotten hurt. And the Thing is freaking out because all the safety mechanisms have been taken down. So he can dish out all the damage, but none of the bad guys in the simulation are going to pull punches. So they know that something is wrong, and Franklin doesn't know what's going on. The Thing doesn't know what's going on. They're trying to figure it out with each other when suddenly, bam, the Human Torch comes in and attacks both of them, except something's wrong with them. His voice is all dark, evil, and demonic. And he's like, if you protect the child, you will die with the child. And what ends up happening is they're like, Johnny, what the hell is going on? And it gets to the point where Franklin is like, oh my gosh, I think I know that voice. So the Thing stays behind and he fights this possessed Johnny Storm while Franklin runs off for shelter. They fight. We see a couple of cool spreads where we actually see the Thing actually getting pretty violent with his teammate because he's possessed and everything. And just as soon as they think that, hey, what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull out this giant pipe from the wall and kind of like cool down Johnny. Because water beats fire. Everyone knows that. He thinks he's got a moment to kind of calm him down, but the Human Torch just completely blasts him through a wall and they're falling off of the Baxter Building. So what ends up happening is the torch is down because he fell and the Thing grabbed him. The Thing is, you know, he's getting up. They crashed on a taxi and they're like, oh, man, what's going on? And suddenly the Thing realizes that Johnny's no longer talking all evil and demonic like. He's like, hey, Ben, what the hell is going on? At that point, the Thing realizes, oh, no, whatever was possessing Johnny is back up with Franklin. So Franklin is running and he's screaming, Mom, Dad, where are you guys? So Mr. Fantastic comes around the corner and he's like, hey, buddy, what's up? And Franklin's like, Dad, like something's wrong. Like we need to hide. So you know, Mr. Fantastic, like, hey, bud, nothing's wrong. And next thing you know, Franklin looks at him and he's like, wait a second, you're not my dad. And now Reed, Mr. Fantastic, has the same evil demonic voice and red eyes. And he's like, I'm within your father, controlling his every thought. Surely you remember me, child. You remember Onslaught. And as soon as, you know, everyone.
And Franklin's like, dude, I'm 12. I barely remember shit.
Yeah, I mean, kids these days, you don't know. But anyway, as soon as, you know, evil Onslaught Reed Richards is about to kill Franklin, who do we have? Everyone's favorite member of the Fantastic Four, the Invisible Woman, and all that Liefeld greatness.
Unfortunately, without the mid-90s Invisible Woman sexy upgrade.
Oh, the boob window?
Oh, yeah. Big fan.
Yeah,
big
some
fan.
Things weren't always that great. So what ends up happening is Mr. Fantastic goes to attack Sue because now Sue's the only thing that's going to stop him from killing Reed. And you know, Sue is just like, Franklin, you got to run. You got to run. So what ends up happening is Reed is going full elastic force on her. Meanwhile, she's using all of her shield powers to stop Onslaught, but at the same time, not kill her husband. So they end up basically making each other just black out in the middle of this fight. And at this point, Franklin is running towards his room. And what he does is he opens up a drawer. And inside the drawer, he has this giant glowing ball. It's like a
weird. I like that's just in. It looks like a box of toys.
It's
like
in the Baxter building,
just
man.
Just mixing with his shit.
Yeah. So at this point, he's like, okay, I've got to do this. And we're just wondering, like, what's he got to do? And Onslaught comes behind him and he's like, not this time, child. You will not save your family. You will die first. And then I will kill every hero this universe has ever known. And Franklin's like, Mom, Dad, I love you both so much. And then out of nowhere, Franklin disappears. And Onslaught's like, hey, what the hell? Meanwhile, we go to the next page, and Mr. Fantastic and the Thing, they've both woken up, you know, Thing's upstairs. Mr. Fantastic's no longer possessed and stuff, and they're running towards Franklin's room. And they're like, oh my God, like, what's going on? We gotta save Franklin. And then they get to the room and they see that Onslaught's not there, but that glowing ball that Franklin was holding is there. So now we go back to Franklin. We see him standing.
All right, wait, time out. Just so I can follow along here, because these are the questions I was thinking as I was reading it. So is this little ball universe? Yeah. This is like the Heroes Reborn universe in theory, right?
No, I'll go ahead and spoil it. Everything okay. In Heroes Return happened. All of that happens. However, you can't destroy matter. Only Onslaught can destroy matter. So in order to bring the heroes back, what Franklin had to do is he had to create an exact copy of the world where the events of Heroes Reborn didn't happen. Therefore, he could go ahead and bring his family and friends back into the main continuity while not destroying and killing everyone from the Heroes Reborn universe.
Okay. So it's basically a backup drive.
Yeah.
In this little ball here. Okay. I'll accept that because comics.
So basically, in order to protect everyone from that universe, he had to jump into his pocket universe. And while he's there, I think he's at the George Washington Bridge in New York. He's hiding. He's freaking out. And meanwhile, somebody's running towards him. And she's like, hey, kid, what are you doing up there? And he's like, I'm hiding. And she says, well, you picked a good spot for it. Not a lot of people hang out up here. You got a name? And this is when we're introduced to a character we've not seen in almost a decade, Ricky Barnes. Ricky Barnes is Bucky in the Heroes Reborn universe. And she was a pure original Liefeld creation. And at this point, this is when we know, oh, shoot, he's actually in the Heroes Reborn verse. So Bucky and Franklin are meeting each other. She wants to make sure she's okay. He's hiding to make sure Onslaught can't find him. Well, sucks, because as soon as they're about to, you know, become friends and everything, who shows up behind him? Onslaught. And he says he was hiding from me.
And he looks scary.
End of this issue one.
I will say Onslaught looks really, really scary in this.
He's freaking terrifying in the 90s most intense way that can be.
Yeah. And I will say, like, my first thoughts on this, like, when I saw that this existed, first of all, let alone that you had it on this list, I kind of rolled my eyes. I was like, Onslaught Reborn? What is this? But just from the first issue alone, my thoughts kind of dissipated, because it's okay. So this is not like some genius work or anything like that. But it really took me back to the 90s, like seeing Rob Liefeld's art throughout this book. And it the book is, it's fun. All right. This is not Alan Moore. It's not, you know, Neil Gaiman type writing, but it's fun and it pulls you right in. And it,
like, that wasn't me speeding. That's just me going at the natural pace of the book.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was ready to dislike it. And I will say after the first issue, I at least didn't hate it. I'll just say that.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, this isn't even something for a lot of veteran readers, and this certainly isn't what I'd consider something for a lot of new readers. It's fan service for people who liked this specific era and this specific style of art and storytelling. So for this sure. is really for a very select group of readers.
Yep. And when you're Marvel, you can do stuff like that. When you have a, you know, 50 books in a month, you can have a miniseries that's just targeted towards a certain niche audience who you want to maybe recapture or have them reminisce about some things they used to enjoy in their younger years. So
yeah, and I mean, this is why I love the team of Jeff Loeb and Rob Liefeld, because what Loeb does is he kind of like gives him the general outline and boundaries of where the story is going, and then he just lets Liefeld go to town with it. Because really, it's a story of very, you know, quick dialogue, not a lot of giant, you know, minute details and big progressions or anything. It's just a lot of ass kicking. I mean, that section where the Thing and the Human Torch are fighting is like 3-4 pages alone in a 16-page book. So, I mean, it's really, it's very action-oriented.
Yep, indeed.
Yeah. So now we're on to issue 2. And I just got to say, what I love about this era is I love about the series is I really love the covers. We get to see Thor in, I think, one of his most badass incarnations, because he looked like something between, like, you know, a rock star and an absolute, like, warrior Viking. Like, Thor doesn't look intimidating in a lot of the comics. Whereas here, Liefeld really tries to remind people, Thor's a freaking warrior. And he will kill the living shit out of a lot of bad guys if he has to. And then in the background, you see the Heroes Reborn Iron Man costume, which is, I'll admit, kind of freaky. You're more of a Fantastic Four guy than I am, Mark. I liked the Heroes Reborn Fantastic Four uniforms. Usually they go for just the regular blue and black motif, but I like the white. I like the way that he did it. Yeah, so, I mean, just looking at this era of very 90s stylized costumes, I mean, what do you think of the Fantastic Four? Because personally, they're one of my favorites.
Oh, when they have, like, the part white and the little four in the corner?
Yeah.
I like them. I think they're snazzy.
Yeah.
It's nothing compared to the revealing mid-90s Sue Richards outfit that I'll always be fond of. But I do like this version of the Fantastic Four outfit. It's true to the original, but it's sleeker and it feels 90s.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I like about it, because with issue 1, they're easing into setting the stage for the story. Now, as soon as Franklin Richards is in the pocket dimension, we're back full 90s, and it's so beautiful. So now we pick up with issue 2, and Ricky Barnes is like, Franklin, like, this beast who followed you from where you came from, I mean, is it that thing? And he's like, yep. And Onslaught comes over, and he's like something out of a Zack Snyder movie. He's like, I am death. And like, Ricky is just making fun of him. She's like, you're death? I thought death would look more like Brad Pitt. And Onslaught is like, child, I'm only here for Franklin Richards. I can spare you or fillet you. It makes no difference. And Ricky's like, well, it would make a difference to me. Is it my imagination, or is he just getting bigger? And basically, Onslaught is like something out of a terrifying anime film. He's just getting more monstrous looking, and he's just becoming even bigger. He's just freaking terrifying. So he starts chasing them, and they're just freaking the hell out. Eventually, they're about to go ahead and fall off the bridge, and they're calling for help. And at that point, you're thinking, oh, shit, I'm going to die. I hope somebody can save me. And just like an epic Jeff Loeb fashion, he does that exact same thing. You see Captain America jumping from a freaking jet with his shield and everything. And he says, it doesn't matter what decade I wake up in, there's always some madman who builds himself up by picking on women and children. And he freaking shield smashes Onslaught across the face like he's nothing. Mark, what do you think of that introduction?
I love it. It's perfect in so many ways. It's so true to the Captain America character. It doesn't matter how scary the situation, how outmatched he might be if he's facing. I mean, he obviously has no idea what this creature is, but I don't know, man. I'm probably not jumping out of a jet plane to attack this thing with my freaking shield. But that's exactly what Captain America does. And he gets in a good whack. Like right when he lands, he whams, literally wham is the word balloon we see. Whams Onslaught right in the face. And then like jumps back, jumps on his back, whams him again with a shield. And you actually see blood coming out of Onslaught. So like this man who is basically a man. I mean, yes, he has the super soldier serum. Try saying that seven times fast. But this is not the Hulk. This is not the Thor. This is basically a slightly stronger man. And he takes it to Onslaught, which I just loved. And it was also nice to see, like, this is, you know, to fans of the Heroes Reborn universe, like based on the outfit and the stylization of Rob Liefeld. This is obviously not our Captain America. It is the Heroes Reborn Captain America.
Yeah. What I got to say about this Captain America is that he's always giving a speech. Like, that's the thing about Loeb. Like, you either love it or hate it. A lot of people, and I always thought it was kind of cheesy, but, like, looking back at it, it's like, you know what? I'm not mad. It just works.
It works here, too, because he's especially, like, he's like, you know, talking about, oh, he's like, it's called the American flag, bitch. I added the bitch again. I like to do that sometimes. But, and Captain, and they get into this, like, conversation. Like, he's like, Captain America's like, folks have tried to burn it, spin on it, disrespect it. And Onslaught's like, I care nothing for your politics. And he's like, this has nothing to do with politics. For over 200 years, this flag has been a symbol of hope around the world. And then Onslaught's all, then by killing you, let me send a different message to your insignificant world. Onslaught cannot be denied. And that's when Captain America just flips on his back and just slams that shield right into Onslaught's neck. So I love it. Like Captain America, he's jumping in to save Bucky, save Franklin, who he doesn't even know who the hell he is yet. And even Onslaught here is like, you hurt me. Like not expecting that at all. And then of course he's ready to bring hell upon Captain America.
Yeah. But just like any good fight, you got to bring your friends to the bar, folks. As mm-hmm. soon as we think that Cap is down for the count, he's about to go kill Bucky and Franklin, we see the inclusion, the epic appearance for the first time in the series of Tony Stark, Iron Man, and Thor looking as 90s as hell. And Thor is about to smack him with Mjolnir, and you see Iron Man just blasting him like a freaking hand cannon. This is when the explosions were bigger, the muscles were larger, and the action was just so obstructively in your face. So they start just kicking the living shit out of him. And the fight goes on for a few more pages, and they're actually doing pretty well. They fight like a team, and then because he's got to do it, Cap is like, okay, on three, one, two, Avengers assemble. And they all just bum rush him, pushing him off the George Washington Bridge. And, you know, I guess he just disappears at that point. But the next time we pick up, they're on the Quinjet. We see the inclusion of swordsmen, Tigra, yeah, it's Tigra, and Hawkeye,
and they and a very odd look. It took me a second, and we'll get to this later, I guess. Yeah. I'll wait for the reveal, but let's just say Hawkeye looks different.
There's something about Hawkeye.
If anybody's following along reading this at home, they will know what I mean, but for those that aren't, we'll just save this reveal for later.
Yeah, so basically they're like, Franklin, where are your parents, kid? And he's like, we gotta go. They're the Fantastic Four. And they're like, Sue and Franklin Richards don't have kids. But obviously that thing is not from this world. It was following you, so he might as well go figure it out. I mean, after all, Reed Richards is the smartest man in the world. So they end up going to the Baxter Building, where Captain America and Iron Man are trying to explain what just happened. And Mr. Fantastic is like, after they've spoken, fascinating. I've postulated the theory that there are other dimensions where doppelgangers of ourselves exist. I only recently became aware of these so-called counter-Earths, which mirror our own on the other side of the sun. But it's populated by these beast men. If the boy says it's true, we might be looking at some future version of our own timeline. To which Captain America is like, hey, that's just it, Reed. According to Franklin, we're not copies of the heroes on his world. And Iron Man jumps in and he's like, we are those heroes, you know, shunted off to some other kind of hidden dimension, reborn, so to speak. So
we're really gonna drive this reborn thing home.
Yeah. So Reed looks back at them and he's like, gentlemen, as much as my heart desires marrying Susan Storm, there are no immediate plans for such an event. I'm sure Frank
fine. I just love the way Reed talks. It's like any other guy would be if they like hadn't quite gotten to that point in their relationship, and then someone brings it up. They're like, well, I'd certainly like to do that in the future. We haven't made that plan yet, but it's done through the Reed Richards, like, I'm the scientist dialogue. And it just really cracked me up.
Yeah. And basically he's just like, I don't know what Franklin is, but he's not my kid. Meanwhile, they need to go ahead and comfort Franklin. They need more answers. And Reed is just, you know, he's just too logical. So what they end up bringing in Susan Storm, and Franklin runs over to him and he's like, Mom. And Susan's like, Mom, well, I mean, that's cute. And Franklin's like, I mean, you don't know who I am. And she's just really confused. So Hawkeye comes in. And he's like, I hate breaking up this little family picnic, but we just got word that Hulk. And before he finishes the sentence, this giant like piece of machinery, looks like a tractor or something, flies through the side of the Baxter building, and everyone's freaking out. And the thing is just like, that's not something you see every day. So they all kind of, you know, step around Franklin, and the Fantastic Four is still trying to figure out, like, who's this kid calling his mom, dad, uncle? And at this point, we end up going off somewhere else. We're in some type of, like, I think we're in some type of swamp in the next page. And we see the Enchantress. And what she's doing is she's seeing that, something is wrong with the world. There's something from outside of our dimension. Meanwhile, who ends up flying in behind her? Loki, Prince of Mischief. If you've seen any of the MCU films, at least you know who Loki is. It's Thor's evil half-brother. So at this point, Thor is trying to find where the Hulk is, because somehow, you know, he threw something into the Baxter building, but he didn't come in. So they're trying to find him. Iron Man's trying to find him. Next, you know, they get around the city and they're like, Hulk, hey, man, like, what's up? And Hulk starts looking at them and he's like, Hammer Man wants to fight Hulk. Hulk is strongest there is. But even though he talks like Hulk, he sounds different and his eyes are red. What the Enchantress saw was that Onslaught was looking for the strongest being in the world, which happens to be the Hulk. So now Thor and Iron Man are about to get into it with him. And as Thor's about to head down and actually begin to, you know, figure out how to get Onslaught out of Hulk, Hulk just completely beats the shit out of him. And that's what leaves us at the end of issue 2.
Indeed. And yeah, I don't know how much more I can add. Like, this book is, it's very much action centric. It's just really about reminiscing for those that remember these stories, remember these versions of the characters. It's about bringing us back to those times. But I mean, to me, like, the story's fine. I'm not offended by the story. It's not bad. It's not great. But I am getting the nostalgia feel. Like it is fun to see Rob Liefeld get back into these characters, even. You know, I can't really remember what my memories are of Heroes Reborn. I probably remember thinking it was a cool concept, but I also remember being a lot more excited at Heroes Return. Like, I was excited when they came back, when the Avengers came back, when Captain America came back, because then it was like, all right, we're getting everything back to where it was, to what I remember growing up with prior to that. But I always enjoyed just the fact of the Heroes Reborn universe, like forget the actual titles themselves, more the fact that they brought in which seemed unfathomable 6 or 7 years before this, they brought Rob Liefeld and Jim Lee back to work on Marvel books again. That was just such a cool thing at the time. And seeing Rob Liefeld get back involved with these characters again here, now, for me, as a 40-year-old man that had never read the story before, I'm kind of getting those vibes again. Like, it's almost like I don't care as much what's going on in the story. To me, it's just kind of cool to see Rob Liefeld getting to play with these characters again.
Do you almost wish they had done, like, a split continuity where obviously the heroes return to the main universe and you get all the original continuity from Marvel, but you have a separate universe just for the Heroes Reborn? Heroes, kind of like what we had of Ultimate Marvel?
Not really. I think what we've got is enough. I think it's one of those things that it's a nice thing to reminisce upon if you were there. But I don't think we needed like the last 20 years to also have a parallel Heroes Reborn universe any more than I thought we needed to have a parallel Ultimate Universe. I mean, Ultimate Universe was basically the same concept as Heroes Reborn in the sense that, okay, that's a lot of these same characters, but we're giving them slightly tweaked origins and we're doing it like from the beginning, like they're all new to this universe. So to me, they're very similar, maybe not in execution, but in concept. But you know, I'm a continuity guy, and I like to be able to keep track of my continuity, which is obviously like a yeoman's task, yeoman America's task here in comic book land in general. But the less parallel realities going on at the same time, the better for me in general. So I just kind of like when it's all in one universe. I'm cool with Elseworlds tales. I'm cool with alternate takes on universes that we dip our toe into, but I don't need simultaneous like continuities going on in my life. So I can't say it makes me yearn for more of this. It makes me yearn for just this amount of this, I'd say.
Yeah, I totally get it. I mean, with this, I always felt like there was a shelf life. I just wish there was more story to tell, because for a lot of these books, like Captain America, Iron Man, Avengers at the time, it's like just when they really started becoming like their own, then it was time for Heroes Return. So it was almost like there's so much potential for stuff that should have probably been done, but they went ahead and just rushed to the finish line. Primarily, Marvel wanted those titles back.
I often wonder what the world would have been like if instead of Jim Lee selling Wildstorm to do DC, that if that making that, because he was trying to make basically the same deal with Marvel, in which point he would become editor-in-chief of Marvel and he would sort of absorb, he would essentially have become Marvel Comics. They were essentially going to farm out the Marvel titles to Jim Lee, to like Wildstorm Studios, and Wildstorm Studios would have basically been the producer of these Marvel licensed comics. And it's just interesting for me to think what the comic book world would be like right now if that is what happened. But instead, Jim Lee ended up going and making that basically that same deal with DC. And you know, he didn't end up taking over all the DC titles like he was trying to do with Marvel. And Rob Liefeld lays all this story out, at least from his perspective, on his podcast, which I can't recommend highly enough. I can recommend it as the third best comic book podcast after Second Print Comics Podcast, Weird Science, and then listen to Observations. But yeah, he goes through all this stuff. It's just interesting to think about where we might have been and where we might be in alternate realities if some of these, we should do like a what if episode of real life. Like, what if Jim Lee had taken over Marvel with Wildstorm Studios?
What if JFK had not been assassinated?
How would that affect the Marvel universe?
Oh my gosh. So anyway, we're on to issue 3. Thor is still in the fight and he picks up Mjolnir and he looks at the Hulk dead in the eyes as he's possessed by Onslaught, and he's like, if you're the strongest there is, your death will seal my reign. So what ends up happening is Onslaught went from the Hulk to Thor, and now Hulk is like, dude, what the hell? So they just fight. And what I love is I always feel like they always held back, certain characters who we always wanted to see fight in the comics. Like, I love watching Thor and Hulk fight. I love watching Hulk and Wolverine fight and Thing and Hulk fight. Primarily these people who are supposed to be as tough as the Hulk, but not quite the Hulk, as we discuss a lot in the World War Hulk episode from a few weeks back. But they're just beating the shit out of each other. And just as, you know, Onslaught Thor basically has Hulk down and he's about to just go ahead and smash his head in with the hammer. The hammer falls back and Onslaught Thor is like, my strength, what madness is this? Why can't I lift the hammer? And he's trying to lift it and he's like, no being can deny me, not let alone some tool defy my power. And what we know is that no one that's not Thor can hold and wield Mjolnir because they're not
worthy. Well, no one that's not worthy.
Yeah, no one who's not worthy. So because even though it's Thor, the hammer knows it's not Thor, that it was cheap.
Yeah.
So this gives the Hulk enough time to, you know, get back up, and he's about to go ahead and smash Thor. And right before, you know, Onslaught Thor, right before that happens, Onslaught jumps from Thor's body to Hulk's body, and he's like, I'm going to simply control the other one then. And then Thor looks up and he's like, oh, by Odin's blood, My mind is clear at last, just as he's gone ahead and smacked him, and then he picks him up and punches him across New York City. And then at this point, you know, Onslaught still hasn't gotten it. He's like, ah, you know, I guess this guy's strong enough to lift the hammer. He goes for Mjolnir, and then he reads the side of the hammer that says, whoever wields the hammer, if thee be worthy, shall possess the power of Thor. So he's like, ah, I'm Onslaught. I'm, you know, my worthiness is based upon...
Obviously, I'm worthy. No one's more worthy than fucking Onslaught.
Yeah, but, you know, because neither Thor or Hulk together could go ahead and try and beat Onslaught, who ends up coming in? The world's most useless hero.
Whack, whack, whack. We see the arrows come in.
He turns around, Onslaught Hulk, and he's like, who dares? And he sees Hawkeye. But don't worry, it's not just Hawkeye. It's Hawkeye, the Human Torch, Iron Man, Tigra, Swordsman, and Captain America. And Captain America yells, Torch, Iron Man, head north. You've got to find Thor. If I'm to understand correctly, he's got less than 60 seconds. I don't know what he's... Oh, yeah, basically those arrows that, you know, worthless Hawkeye shot aren't that worthless. Basically, they're adamantium tips outfitted in a way that could go ahead and actually hurt the Hulk. So because it's actually hurt Onslaught, they bought a minute of time. So
I love how Onslaught just doesn't get it. He's like, first he can't lift the hammer when he's Thor. He's like, oh, okay, no worries. I'll just transfer to Hulk's body. Like, he's strong. He can lift it up for sure. And then he still can't lift it. He's like, what the fuck is this? I'm Onslaught. I'm worthy. I just love that whole sequence where he thinks it's going to be as simple as just jumping to the Hulk's body. Whereas no, man, you ain't worthy. It doesn't matter whose body you're in. You're Onslaught. You're a bitch and you can't lift this thing.
Yeah, so Tigra and Swordsman, the people who aren't good enough against the Hulk, nonetheless Onslaught Hulk, they're basically like, they're actually kind of brave. They know they can't do much, but they can distract them. So they're going ahead and they're quickly distracting the Hulk. Meanwhile, Captain America runs to Hawkeye and he's like, Hawkeye, somehow this Onslaught can possess each and every one of us. Find them or the Avengers are going to die out here. And Hawkeye's like, why? What makes you think I can fight whatever we need? So Captain America gets in his face and he's like, you don't think I know who you are under that mask? Find Onslaught, soldier. And there's just this pause and Hawkeye just kind of looks at him. And just to describe Hawkeye, he's fully covered head to toe, but he doesn't look like Hawkeye in any of the other comics. To spoil it, he kind of looks like a certain X-Man. So after that pause, Hawkeye looks dead set in the eyes of Captain America. And he's like, when this is over, you and me are going to have a various sit down, bub. That's all I'm going to say about that one for now. But anyway, I
mean, it's pretty obvious. If anyone's reading, it's obvious from the beginning who it is, but we'll still wait for the reading. Yeah.
But anyway, the Avengers are just completely losing to Onslaught Hulk, but they still fight valiantly. Meanwhile, what ended up happening is Thor was thrown into space, but because he was pulled away from his hammer, he reverted back into his human counterpart form of Donald Blake, who's about to suffocate in space. So Iron Man's able to grab him before he completely dies. And at this point, you know, the Hulk is completely like torn apart the Avengers. We see another panel, and I don't like the way the panel artists work because we don't really know who is where and when all this is happening. But what we see is that the hammer is turned into a stick, you know, Donald Blake's cane, so to speak. So when he turns back in, when Thor turns into Donald Blake, the hammer turns into a stick cane. Somehow, Onslaught is mad. So he picks it up and throws it into the ocean. And who ends up picking it up? Namor the Submariner.
Who else? Happens to be just in the right spot.
Did
in the Namor
ocean. Namor show up earlier?
Not in this series, no.
So, okay, here's the first appearance of Namor in Onslaught Reborn.
In fact, I'm not even sure. I don't remember if he appeared at all in the original Heroes Reborn, but it's definitely his first appearance.
Fantastic Four one by Jim Lee.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because he was heavy. They went heavy on the Invisible Woman Namor thing in that one.
Yeah.
If I recall.
Yeah. The best shipping.
Very heavy.
So anyway, Iron Man comes back and Iron Man basically has this one boost in his armor where basically he can put so much strength and power into his gauntlets, he can knock down the Hulk, but he can only do it once. So he comes down, flying down, and he hits the Hulk so freaking hard in the head. He's like, I hope someday you'll forgive me. And what that does is it knocks out the Hulk while getting rid of Onslaught. So they all think, oh my gosh, like we stopped this immediate problem, man. Like, this is good, but we got to find Onslaught. Sadly, what we see is that Iron Man lifts up his gauntlet and repulsor blasts Cap in the head. And he's like, Cap, that is going to be a problem, because now Onslaught is in Iron Man. So we go ahead and leave that. We're in the next page. We see that the Human Torch is carrying in the body of Donald Blake into the Baxter Building. And they're just like, man, like, Onslaught's just tearing everyone apart. Meanwhile, we're in the Baxter Building kitchen, and Ricky Barnes has just made her and Franklin some breakfast. And they're just like, hey, man, you know, we just got to chill. All the heroes are going to take care of it. They always do. And Franklin's freaking out, because as they look into the living room, they see the Masters of Evil, the Executioner, the Scarlet Witch, who apparently got a boob job from issue one, Enchantress, and Ultron 5. So basically,
because issue one was actually MCU 616 Scarlet Witch. Yeah. So I guess the Heroes Reborn Scarlet Witch just has bigger titties.
Yeah, just So anyway, what ends up happening is the Masters of Evil,
my God, and they are Jesus.
They're just, wow. Bam, like Pam Anderson.
I'm trying not to make this the misogynist hour, but I mean, it's not our fault. We're males, and we're looking at this art from Rob Liefeld. What do you want to say? I love the 90s. I was a teenager at the right time in comic art. Let me tell you that.
Yeah. So basically, the Masters of Evil are there. And what they basically say is, hey, listen, we're not here to cause any problems. In fact, what we want to do is we want to stop Onslaught. And while Loki's about to go ahead and do his classic thing of telling you the whole supervillain plan, we see the Invisible Woman is there, sneaking up on them. But she's there with Ant-Man, who doesn't look like regular Ant-Man. This looks like Battle Ant-Man. He looks actually awesome.
That is a perfect thing to call him, Battle Ant-Man.
That's Zack Snyder's Ant-Man right there.
Yeah, that's the Snyder cut of Ant-Man and the Wasp.
So anyway, that's the end of issue three.
I was excited by this because I just in general, I'm kind of a fan of the trope wherein a team of villains who are certainly villainous and certainly up to no good, they come in, and despite the fact that they have completely different agendas, they end up going to team with the superheroes because there is a greater threat that threatens them all. And I can see that was clearly being built up here. So I was a fan to see this element added to the story, and a fan of the enhanced version of Scarlet Witch.
We're feminists. Do what you want with your body. We support you.
Exactly. I'm as feminist as it comes, and I fully support her right to wear that bustier.
Hey, like, no complaints here. Anyway, we're moving on. Issue four opens up with Cap and Onslaught Iron Man.
I can't wait till I run for president one day and all the clips come out of me just being a drooling misogynist on over comic book characters.
Gets put together. They come for us all.
Exactly.
We go on to issue four, and it basically just picks up with Cap and Iron Man fighting each other, and it's just more Liefeld action. Like, I could go through the dialogue, but it doesn't really matter, because what's awesome are the punches, the lasers. I mean, this is a very 90s style. This is why you love Rob Liefeld or you hate him, but he's never not going to give you epic fights every single panel. So what ends up happening is, because Onslaught is not these heroes. He doesn't know how their powers really work, as we saw with the Hulk and Thor earlier. So because of that, Captain America knows that he's not fighting Tony Stark in the armor. He's fighting someone that has no clue how the armor works.
It's actually the worst person that Onslaught could jump into, because everyone else at least has like natural powers of their own, but Iron Man, like, you got to know how to use that suit, bro. And Onslaught doesn't know shit. So he's actually like at the biggest disadvantage here, I think, when he's in the Iron Man
suit. Yeah. So basically what Iron Man ends up doing is he disables what Captain America ends up doing is he uses his shield to destroy Iron Man's jetpack. So that way he doesn't have the ability to fight from the air. And they just basically beat each other into such a freaking pulp. They both knock each other out. So at this point, Onslaught's now in the body of knocked out Tony Stark, while Captain America is also knocked out. But it doesn't matter, because now Onslaught succeeded. All the heroes are down. So he comes back in his giant Onslaught form, and he's just taking the victory lap. He's like, "Is there no one on this planet who will challenge me?" So then we get over to the Baxter Building. Reed, the Human Torch, and a Thing are trying to resuscitate Donald Blake. But what they realize is that in order to jumpstart his heart again before he actually dies from, you know, being thrown into space earlier, Namor shows up and he's like, listen, I think this big staff might have something to do with it, guys. So he goes ahead and is about to give it to him. Then we skip to the other page. And what ends up happening is this. Loki comes over and he's like, listen, Thor is dead, seemingly. Thor is dead. My half-brother now resides in Valhalla, embraced by the goddess Hela. The monster known as Onslaught is his murderer. And for such an act, he will be destroyed.
I like how Loki acts like it's just to avenge his brother who he's been trying to kill for, like, I don't know, like millennia. But just to, like, act like he's kind of has heroic motives here when it's obviously all just self-preservation. Like, yes, these guys do want to destroy Onslaught too, but it's because Onslaught poses a threat to themselves and their entire universe. So yeah, of course they want to destroy him. But I love how Loki just always has to put the spin on things, like, oh, my poor dear brother, he's off in Valhalla now, we must avenge him.
Yeah, and basically before we can really figure out like what else is going on, Wonder Man, and what I will admit is kind of a stupid costume. Wonder Man is
really stupid.
He's like, Loki, I took care of the butler, but we're not alone here. And Loki's like, not alone, Wonder Man, what dost thou mean? Because now he speaks Victorian now. So next thing you know, the other heroes attack. Vision takes out Wonder Man because
I love Vision's entrance where he responds, logically, that would be me. He just emerges inside Wonder Man.
I don't even remember Vision in the original Heroes Reborn Avengers. I don't remember if he was included or not, but I'm happy.
I don't either.
Next thing you know, Sue Storm puts these force field bubbles around Enchantress and recently back from surgery Scarlet Witch, and she knocks him out by cutting off the air supply. And then, battle Ant-Man, Zack Snyder's Ant-Man comes down and basically, like, what it looks like is it looks like he's blinding Executioner. So then as soon as that happens, Ultron and Vision start fighting each other. Loki's about to go ahead and bring the thunder down, apparently. But that's okay, because what they ended up doing was, giving them enough time to at least get Bucky and Franklin out of there. But Loki's able to go ahead and quickly resuscitate Enchantress and Scarlet Witch, who start hexing Ant-Man. And what they end up doing is they basically cause Ant-Man to turn into Giant Man, exploding Avengers Mansion from the inside. And then what we see is just 60-foot naked, I don't know if it's Scott Lang or Hank Pym, but what I can assume is that the Masters of Evil are underneath him. Maybe, or maybe they teleported out. I don't know.
I guess.
But anyway, yeah. So they're on the side of Pym, Lang. I don't know who it is specifically, and they've knocked out. They've knocked out Ant-Man. They've knocked out Vision. Suddenly, the Masters of Evil are up, and they're about to go after Franklin, because I think what they're going to do is they're going to use him as like bait or something for Onslaught. And just before Loki can come down and grab Franklin, he gets hit in the back by a hammer. It happens to be Mjolnir. And now Thor is back with the Human Torch, the Thing, Mr. Fantastic, and Namor. And they just start kicking ass. But right before that happens, Loki's like, listen, man, like I know that there's a way for this universe to survive. And for that to happen, the boy must die. So now everyone's just like, I don't know what's going to happen. So they look at Reed. They're like, Reed, is he serious? And Reed is like, I can't agree. I think I have to agree with Loki. So then Bucky and Franklin just look at Reed and they're like, what? And that ends issue 4.
They're like, what? Yeah. He's like, I must agree with Loki here. He is technically correct. And they're like, oh shit. Well, what are we going to do now? Especially for poor Franklin. He's like, that's my fucking dad, man. Even though it's not, but it is to him. Sort of. He's like, yeah, my dad just basically said he's got to kill me so that you never can survive. So good times.
I felt like this was definitely a filler issue. I don't feel like it was that relevant. I liked the action, but I don't think it really did anything to progress the story. I'll say that at least.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess you could argue this whole series is a filler series, but yeah, I guess in terms of this one, we, you know, we got the incorporation of the Masters of Evil and yada 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 and that whole battle. I enjoyed Vision battling with Ultron. I like when he's like, I may be many things, Ultron, but I will never be your son. Just little things like that. I mean, again, it kind of sums up my feelings of the series overall. Each of these issues, none of them are Shakespeare and none of them are offensive.
Yeah. So we're on to issue 5, and Thor and Reed Richards are yelling at each other. Thor's like, how can thou speak thus harshly, Richards? Would you bring harm to a small child? And Reed is like, as I said, I haven't concluded my research, but if we are to believe that Franklin altered reality so that all of us have different lives, different origins, who's to say he didn't create Onslaught? So at this point, like, Reed Richards and Thor are fighting because Thor's just like, we have to be heroes, man. We have to save this child. Meanwhile, Enchantress and Loki are just like laughing this entire time. So then, you know, the other heroes have to basically break up the fight. And what it basically comes down to is they're like, listen, no one's going to hurt this child. Okay. Meanwhile, what we see is that Hawkeye has reached them and he's like, listen, everyone. Okay. One, the kid didn't have anything to do with Onslaught. Other than, like, you know, that beast following him here. And two, I just might know the best way to take him down. And Rita's like, how would you know that? And he replies, because with Franklin's help, I remember just who the hell I am. Remember, this isn't the old Heroes Reborn universe. This is a pocket universe where things can still change and Franklin can still alter reality. So at this point, we're back at the Baxter Building. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to set a trap for Onslaught. So Franklin is there with Ben, and Onslaught is in the building. They have another fight. And what ends up happening is Hawkeye jumps out at him. And at this point, we're thinking, what's Hawkeye going to do? Well, he pulls off his mask, and what we see is that it's freaking Wolverine. And we know it.
Bitches.
Yeah, we know it, not just because of the way it looks, but because the claws come out. And he's like, hey, I didn't remember at first. Seems like having a spotty memory is part of who I am, but Franklin helped me fill in the blanks. I remember who you are, Onslaught. Just a chunk of the dark side of Xavier and a pretty good-sized tablespoon of Magneto. Shake well, and you're going down. So Bucky's looking at him.
So just remind me here, like, this Hawkeye did not exist in the original Heroes Reborn universe.
The original one was not Hawkeye, but somehow Franklin was still messing with things, and that's what gave us this most random cameo appearance.
So was this Hawkeye in this version of the Heroes Reborn universe always Wolverine who somehow became a Hawkeye, or did Franklin Richards like turn him into Wolverine somehow?
Franklin Richards basically turned him into Wolverine. Marvel editorial did confirm that it was not Wolverine back in the 90s pretending to be Hawkeye.
Okay.
But, well, we never know. We never know.
Because comics,
yeah,
folks.
Because comics. This is one of the most ultimate because comic moments.
This should be entitled Because Comics.
Yeah. So Franklin, I'm sorry. So Bucky looks at Franklin and he's like, and she's like, Franklin, I've never seen Hawkeye with his mask off. Who is that? And Franklin's like, he's my friend. He's a new Avenger from where I come from. He also knows a lot about Onslaught. And she's like, why is that? And he's like, oh, because he's one of the X-Men too. And she's like, the who? And he's like, oh, they're heroes. And Onslaught is freaking out because, like, he actually is weaker against actual mutants. So he starts freaking out. He's like, what? No, there are no mutants on this world. And next thing you know, Hawkeye's like, well, tell that to the Scarlet Witch, bub. So basically, all we can infer is that because of Franklin's interference in the pocket universe, and also because of Scarlet Witch's hex power explosion in the first issue that had to do with House of M and all that stuff, which is something we haven't gotten into much, that's what caused all this extra freak occurrences and changes to happen.
And somehow Franklin Richards turned that Hawkeye into this Wolverine who remembers that universe because he knows all about Onslaught and knows about Scarlet Witch doing the new No More Mutants thing. So,
yeah.
I don't know, because comics, but it's fun anyway.
So basically what ends up happening is they're going to go ahead and trap Onslaught in the negative zone. So they end up fighting. All the heroes end up trying to fight him because Wolverine
I do love here too that we also get a classic, like I love when Wolverine is used this way. It's usually like Colossus throwing him around, but we get Thing
special.
Yeah, when Thing throws him at Onslaught, and then Wolverine uses that moment to snatch Onslaught's helmet, the deformed Magneto helmet off of Onslaught, which again, because he knows Onslaught, knows that this is going to make him more vulnerable.
Yeah. So basically all the heroes basically tag team to try and push Onslaught towards the negative zone portal that's inside the Baxter building, but it's not enough. So what Ricky Barnes does is she gets in one of the Fantastic Four jets. I don't know what that was specifically called. One of the flying Fantastic Four things. She gets in there and she drives
Fantastic Car, I think, in the 60s. I don't know what they call it now.
We'll call it that, the Fantastic Car.
Let's go by it.
And she basically kamikazes herself. She pushes him into the negative zone, but as soon as that happens, they have to seal it off. So Bucky has basically sacrificed herself to save not only Franklin, but this entire universe. So at this point, it seems like they can't do anything about it. So Captain America is screaming, no, no. So he grabs a shield and he's trying to open the door and he's screaming, open it up, open it up. And Reed is seriously sad for once. He's like, hey, I never intended it to end this way. But once the portal's been breached, all of Manhattan would have been destroyed if all of us in it. So at this point, you know, Cap sheds a tear because Bucky's actually dead. So the next page, we see all the heroes. They've created a bust memorial for Ricky Barnes, who they say was a hero reborn, because they have to keep narrowing that down. Because
we got to keep hammering that, huh?
Yeah. And basically what...
When was she reborn in this? Like, it makes no sense, actually, in the context of this. She's actually just a hero who died. Like, that's it.
Yeah, so basically, because Onslaught is gone and everything, it's now safe for Franklin to go back home. And, you know, Reed and Sue realize that everything that Franklin said was real. So, you know, they say goodbye to him. And I like what Sue says. She's like, you're a remarkable boy. And I'm sure that if someday I have a son, and before she could say it, he just gives her a hug and he just says, I love you, Mom. And Reed comes over and he's like, you don't belong here, Franklin. Onslaught is gone, but you have nothing to hide from anymore. You only have to focus on the green ball, because he still kept the green ball connecting him between the worlds. And believe in all your heart that there's no place like home. Literally, they stole a line from Wizard of Oz. And Franklin returns back. He's back in the arms of Reed and the Thing, who are basically in the same
Uncle Ben
in issue one. So basically time only went by for a few minutes in the real.
Like I think like no time went by, because this is the same scene we saw where Mr. Fantastic is saying, how long was I unconscious, Ben? And they run into Franklin's room and he's there. Like, so I think it was just like, I think in Franklin's, like in their world, this was like a second, you know, this is like no time, but it all happened inside that little pocket world in however long it was.
Yeah. And what this ends up also showing is like where you are in current Marvel continuity, because we see Onslaught floating through the negative zone and he's kind of like wondering, where am I? And you see Area 42. Area 42 was the negative zone prison for supervillains created by Iron Man and Reed Richards.
Is it Area 41? But yeah, is that so? So this is what is confusing. Well, this is not the only thing confusing to me, but all right. So the negative zone like lives outside of other dimensions. So is this negative zone that the Heroes Reborn universe pushed Onslaught into, is that the negative zone, or is it the negative zone of the Heroes Reborn universe?
Is the negative zone.
So there's only one negative zone.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, technically there's another one, but we don't talk about that one from Ultimate Fantastic Four. Anyway, so that.
Well, I got to dig into this more, because if there's a separate negative zone for the Ultimate Universe, why is there not a separate negative zone for the Heroes Reborn universe? And why is it the same negative zone?
You know why? Because comics.
I know why. Come on.
So what ends up also happening after that, as we get onto the last page, Ricky Barnes has survived. She's in a brand new world that looks like hers, but it's different. So she's trying to find her surroundings. She turns around to a newspaper stand, also with a bunch of TVs nearby, and she sees on the screen Captain America assassinated. So this story takes place during and after the events of Marvel Civil War.
Yeah, it takes that place after Civil War and after House of M. This is quite a tumultuous time in the Marvel Universe between Civil War, House of M, No More Mutants, Captain America dead. I mean, it was a real big shakeup at this time when you were kind of really coming into your fanhood.
It was crazy. And I mean, I loved this, but it confused the hell out of me, man. But
yeah, it's weird stuff.
Yeah,
it's weird stuff.
So speaking of weird, let's get weirder. I'm gonna let you go ahead and start with your rating first.
Okay, well, as I said, when I first saw this on our agenda, when you first told me this existed, I just kind of laughed to myself. I was like, what? Onslaught is reborn and there's a series about it and this happened. So I was ready to think, I was ready for battle scars here. You know, I was ready for something really, really dumb and really stupid and really bad. And what I got was, I mean, some of it's kind of dumb, some of it's kind of stupid, but it's definitely not bad. I mean, it's not battle scars bad. That's for sure. It's nowhere close. This is actually, you know, especially for someone who remembers the Heroes Reborn universe and really does enjoy the super, super 90s art of Rob Liefeld. I found it fun. I mean, I it didn't offend me. It's five really quick issues that I literally read them in like 30 minutes just sitting down. You know, it's not like Kingdom Come. It's actually really appropriate that we did this right back to back with Kingdom Come, because they're two very different reading experiences. Like Kingdom Come is like this epic immersive experience where you are living inside of this dystopian DC future where all of this biblical stuff is going on, and then suddenly I'm just here in this silly little, you know, revisit to the Heroes Reborn universe and seeing these epic 90s style Rob Liefeld battles where I don't need to think much about what's going on. And it was a nice change of pace. It was actually very good to do these stories back to back, I think, because it gave me kind of like a fresh feeling about it. Like it definitely exceeded the preconceived notions that I had going in. So we'll start with the art. The art is Rob Liefeld. I'm a big fan of Rob Liefeld as a person, big fan of him and his art. I don't think this is the best Rob Liefeld art I've ever seen. I'm not going to give this, like, you know, the highest possible art rating, but I will give the art a 4 out of 5. I enjoyed the art. It's very good art. It's very good if you like that style. I mean, like you said, Rob Liefeld is kind of a love him or hate him kind of guy. And I'm much more on the love him side of things here, but it's not his best work. Like I feel like I've seen even like what I've seen from his Snake Eyes that it came out recently, to me, that's like far better than the art that I saw here. So while I love Rob Liefeld, I'm giving his art a 4 out of 5 here because I just think he's capable and has done much better work. As far as the writing goes, this could have been really bad. Like this easily could have just all the way leaned on Liefeld's art and leaned on the hype of here's Rob Liefeld doing a Marvel story again. But for what this story is, it's pretty good. Like it's, you know, as long as you have the right expectations or lowered expectations, like I did, the dialogue's entertaining enough. For as ridiculous of a story as the whole pocket universe thing is, it's done fairly well. And I never got bored. And there's something to say for that, because not to compare this to Battle Scars, because again, it's so much better, but like Battle Scars bored me. Like that was actually hard to read because it was that
at the end of reading it.
Yeah, I mean, that was just damn boring. Like, I'm now an alcoholic because of Battle Scars. That's why I've been drinking this 40 during this whole show. And I don't know if there's any going back for me. So this is nothing like that. This is pretty entertaining. Like, it's you know, it's nothing that I could call one of the greatest works of all time. It's not an Alan Moore. It's not a Neil Gaiman. It's not a Warren Ellis. But it's decent comic book. It's decent comic book writing. So I'm going to give the writing a 3.5. And that brings me to a grand total of a 7.5, which is actually much higher than I ever thought I would give this before I read it. So it's all a matter of expectations. But at the end of the day, this is a fun, inoffensive story that goes by really quick, that has good entertaining art, entertaining battle scenes, and it's over before you know it. So I think a 7.5 is actually it's a higher score than I'm even believing I'm giving it, but I think it's the score it deserves.
And Mark, I'll agree and slightly disagree. I'll be a little bit more to the point. This is the Fast and Furious of comic books. You either love it or you don't. It's not, you know, it's not Citizen Kane, but it's fun. You read it, you enjoy it, you put it down, you move on. For the artwork, I'll agree with you. It's not Liefeld at its finest, but he has a very unique style, and I really just did enjoy getting to see him put his pen and ink down for these characters again. I'm giving it a 4 out of 5. For the story, I'm going to go a bit looser than you because it fails my test of being good for seasoned readers because there's so much stuff you have to know. And then it also failed on the end of being good for new readers. It's just for a very niche minority of people who read and understand the comics, particularly this era in Marvel. So I'm giving it a 3 out of 5. So for a total score of 7 out of 10.
Can you believe that I rated this higher than you? Did you have any idea that would happen?
Done that per episode I produced.
We actually have similar thoughts on this, though. I think if I had higher expectations going in, I might have given it a 3. But it's more of an expectation thing. Like, I expected it to suck, you know? So, you know, maybe that just caused me to put it a little bit higher, but I'll stick to it. I'm okay with the score. 7.5. This either way, 7.5 puts it firmly in that. Let's see. I guess that's a SBC total of 14.5. That is what we'd say is the category of not great, nothing to write home about, but definitely readable.
Definitely. Well, Mark, I love getting these episodes where we definitely get to see your opinion on these alternate stories. My parting question before we head off is, would you ever want to see Marvel do another type of alternate continuity? And it's ironic because right now we have a brand new series called Heroes Reborn from Marvel, which is a completely different continuity, but it has nothing to do with any of the previous Reborn events. Are you reading that at all? Because I don't think I'm enticed enough to even try that.
You know, we have a mutual friend of ours who is able to help us acquire certain versions of comics that we might not normally purchase. So due to that, I may just read it, but I doubt I would shell out money for it. Let's put it that way. As far as like this type of universe goes, at the end of the day, like, no, I didn't see the necessity of the Ultimate Universe. Like, I thought there are good things in there. I'm happy. I'm sure you'll bring up more stories from there down the road that I'll be happy to read and give my opinions on, because I love doing this kind of thing. I love being exposed to things that I never would have read. Like, I never would have read this ever if I didn't do this podcast with you. So that's one of the reasons I wanted to do this show, so we could each introduce each other to stuff that we might not normally have ever gotten into. But in terms of like these, like, I don't know, I cheered the end of the Ultimate Universe when they were kind of all merged together by Jonathan Hickman's Secret Wars, just because and this is the hardest thing to be as a comic book fan, but I'm kind of a continuity nerd. And to me, separate parallel realities screw that up for me. And so you can't imagine how my head spins trying to figure out DC Comics continuity. But, you know, it's. I like Elseworld stories or like multi-universe stories as individual stories, you know, like, so Heroes Reborn was kind of a short-lived thing. I think it was, I don't know, they claim it might've been longer term, but I feel like it was always meant to be those 12 issues of each of those series. In like a limited fashion where it's like, hey, we're just going to take a little glimpse into another possibility, another reality, or like What If, how What If handles things. Mm-hmm. What If is so fun to me because it's just the Watcher. And he's like, sometimes it's Brian Michael Bendis as the Watcher or something weird, or sometimes it's a computer hacker, whatever. We should do another issue down the road here for sure. But you know, it's glimpses into parallel possibilities, parallel realities that I really enjoy. But when they build a whole nother universe out of it for like they did with the Ultimate Universe that was around for like 12, 13, whatever it was, years, that's too much for me. I don't want to have to think, am I talking about Ultimate Spider-Man or regular Spider-Man or this or that? So I don't like it when they try to create a whole parallel universe that's also going on at the same time as my current universe. But I do enjoy like the occasional dip into alternate universes. Like I really enjoy DC's Earth One, for example, because those are all very self-contained stories. They're all pretty easy to digest. I can pick up the Green Lantern Earth One, give it a read, put it down, I'm done with it. I can pick up the Batman or the Superman Earth One, give them a read, put them down, I'm done with it. And yes, they are there is a larger universe here, but I don't feel overwhelmed because there's not like 20 regular monthly titles I have to follow. It's just sort of a glimpse into another version of what these superheroes could be. So from that perspective, I do enjoy Elseworld's alternate reality tales when they're more self-contained. But when you build a whole Ultimate Universe and it's running for a decade along with the regular universe, that I'm not a fan of.
All right, hater. Well, this is why we come together every week and jump on such important topics. Hey folks, the fun doesn't stop here. Head over to patreon.com/secondprintpod to keep the party going. Join our Second Print Comics fan zone and hang out with Mark and I and other fans every day over in our secret private Facebook group. You can also catch Remso Rants every Sunday, the random Marvel podcast from Mark, and also Tales from the Fuck It Pile, and so much more. And if you want, hand-selected hardcover graphic novels mailed to your door every couple, I think it's every 3 months now, the $25 level and above get you so much more. But I won't bore you with the details. Go over, have some fun yourself, and support this growing Second Print Nation community we're establishing. As always, I'm Remso W. Martinez.
And I am the Metropolis Milquetoast, Mark Claire.
Read comics, change the world.
Change the world.
Night, America.
Adios.